It's the Zoom boom. Apple plays nice with Amazon, turning your Wisecam into a webcam. And an interview with the folks behind Libby, an app that lets you read books for free. Oh yeah, and your tech questions answered. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. Plus, I answer the questions that you send me. My name is Rich DeMuro. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. I am safe at home, in case you can't tell. Also safe at home is producer Megan, who is still trying to work through all of her Wi-Fi issues. Megan, how's it going?
Pretty good. You know, I think we're on day two of the Wi-Fi working pretty well. I have 120 megabytes per second right now on fast.com. So I think that that's a good sign that we're finally getting our Wi-Fi in order.
That is a good sign. Fast.com is a good website that you mentioned. That's kind of my go-to for a quick test of internet speed. And a lot of people this week and last week and the week before have been putting a lot of thought into their internet because we realize just how much we rely on it when we're working from home. You know, the occasional going home, watching Netflix, you know, usually things are going to work. I mean, sometimes there's a little buffering at night because a lot of people are on. But this has been a load on these networks like we've never seen before. And I keep getting emails from all the companies saying how increased the network demand is. And I'm like, that's great. And we all know that. But like, I'm not going to sit there and say those stats on KTLA. Like, we all get it. You know, it's stress. Just make sure it works for us, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of tweeted Spectrum the other day because it like went out again for like a billion times. And then it came back on mysteriously an hour later. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's been
again
ever since then.
And the way that cable, I'm actually thinking of switching to a fiber network here because the way cable works is you're sharing your connection with a lot of different people in your neighborhood. And so when the network is used a lot, you will notice an issue with your network when your neighbors are using it a lot versus some of the fiber networks, you know, like the old kind of, the AT&T's of the world, the Fios of the world, those are more of a dedicated line. So whatever speed you have, it kind of just works for you. But let's get into our first topic of the podcast, which is Zoom. Everybody is using Zoom. Megan, did you ever use Zoom before the whole Zoom boom?
No, I had never heard of Zoom before this.
It's interesting because I had used it, you know, once in the past. It's always interesting whenever I hear something that becomes popular in the tech world, when I go to download it on my iPhone and like I already saw that I downloaded it at some time in the past, I'm like, oh, I've already tried this app out. like House Party was another example. When that became, you know, popular now, I looked to download it to try it out. And I had that little cloud with the arrow pointing down, you know, which means you've downloaded this before. Yeah. Well, Zoom, they're apologizing because we've seen, look, I don't think Zoom is a bad company. I know they've gotten just kind of torn up in the press because there's been so many issues with Zoom. But the reality is this company, they put out a blog post that said, hey, look, we didn't anticipate this either. We were built as a corporate product. We went from 10 million video calls a day to 200 million participants a day. That's a lot.
That's crazy.
They say that it was built for large companies, which means there is an IT department behind them, which means when Zoom gets installed in your computer, the IT department goes through and kind of figures out all the options that work for your company and the privacy options. So they didn't know that people are going to be having virtual happy hours on here and talking to their friends and doing presentations and learning from school. So the amount of change in just a couple of weeks with Zoom has been astronomical. Zoom's purpose at this point is to really capitalize on whatever they can because they don't want to just be a one-trick pony that people use during this time and then forget about, right?
Right.
And to me, the beauty of Zoom is now it's become a proprietary eponym where you say, hey, you want to get on Zoom, and you don't have to explain what that means to people. You don't have to say, oh, download this app and sign up. And you literally can, it's so easy to get on a Zoom call. My five-year-old can do it.
It's amazing. Like, it's just so simple.
So they've also had Zoom bombers, these are people crashing Zoom calls. So long story short, Zoom says they are going to try to do better. They are rolling with the punches and trying to figure out how they can improve their app. It's not like they had any heads up on this thing. So they said for the next 90 days, they're shifting everything except working on trust, safety, and privacy issues. So that's number one. They are going to test their program to make sure that they can, make sure that people can't break into it as much. Like, they want to make sure everything is solid. And they also want to make sure it's a little bit easier for consumers to use as well. They've got all kinds of webinars and instructions and all kinds of things to make it a little bit easier. And I understand that, because the FBI came out with a big warning about Zoom. And I'm just going to go through some of their tips, which are really good. We did a Zoom story and I gave some of my tips there. The FBI tips kind of echo what I mentioned. So number one, don't make your meetings or classrooms public. That's like number one. Make a private conversation. That way nobody can hop in. Don't post a link to one of your meetings on social media or in a public place. Yeah. I made that mistake. I told you this, Megan. And oh my gosh, within a second, I had 30 people in there and they were just doing the craziest things I've ever seen. I was like, it was scary.
Oh,
I couldn't
no.
believe. Yeah. Manage your screen sharing options. So in Zoom, you want to change your screen sharing to host only. And you want to make sure that you're running the most updated software on Zoom so that you have access to all of the things you need. So
do you need to have, quick question about Zoom. Do you
yeah.
need to have the app on your phone? If someone sends you a link to your phone, does it automatically open, or you have to have the app?
On the phone, you have to have the app. You can't do it in the web browser on the phone. But on your computer, and this is one of the things I take a little bit of a problem with, like Zoom basically runs in the web browser 100%, but they try to force you to use the app. You can literally, if you go to zoom.us, and let's say, Megan, you start a Zoom on your computer, you just go to join a meeting on the laptop and you type in the meeting ID. And next thing you know, you'll be joined up, but they try to make you open the app. And so some people have come out with extensions for Chrome that will force it to just open it in the browser, because the browser is kind of safer, because it's not, you're not downloading software to your computer. So,
but on
your phone, you do need the software. So,
okay.
that's also the beauty of the simplicity is that, I can text you a link to a meeting, and next thing you know, you're on it on your phone. I mean, it's really amazing how easy they made it.
So simple.
All right. First question.
Yes. Our first question comes from Debbie. It has to do with Zoom. I'm using Zoom to interact with a deaf population. It keeps freezing or several windows go blank. It is a problem when you are depending on the image to convey the message. ASL is a visual language. What can I do to help make Zoom deaf friendly?
Well, I think she's saying that it flickers in and out. I don't think that that's any problem that she has personally with her computer or her setup. I think that's just Zoom in general. Like I said, they've been experiencing such a large amount of people on this platform. And I think for all said and done, they've held up pretty well. Like, there hasn't been like a major Zoom outage. But with that said, when I am on Zoom, A, the video quality is not that great. And B, I do notice that it does say your internet connection is unstable when I'm not really sure it is. I think that's just their way of saying something's wrong right now. So I think that's what's happening with her. I don't really think there's much she can do. You can try a different program and see if that works. But also, it depends how you're... I would just try...
Aren't the settings on Zoom set to low? Can you make the video quality better if you want and use more battery on your computer?
You can, and you can go into your settings, because HD is not enabled by default. But if she's having trouble with it in non-HD, then I assume maybe with HD it might even be more trouble. But I'm not sure. I mean, it really comes down to the fact that I think that it's just one of these things where this is not a perfect system. Zoom is not, you're not even paying for it most of the time. So you have to understand there are going to be some limitations to it. But this next story may actually help, because Facebook is seeing an opportunity here to kind of swoop in and grab some of the people that are getting frustrated with Zoom. And they have released new desktop apps for Facebook Messenger. And Facebook Messenger has been around forever. There's been video chat inside Facebook Messenger for a long time, but now they released a Messenger app for Mac OS and Windows. And it's totally free. And the cool thing about Facebook Messenger versus Zoom for your video calls is twofold. Number one, the calls are unlimited, so you don't have to worry about that 40-minute limit on Zoom, which is cool. The second thing, and I actually don't see this as a very big advantage anymore, is that everyone's on Facebook so that you don't have to sign up for a new account. You're already on Facebook. So if you download Messenger, you just log in with your Facebook account and boom, you can find your friends very easily. But the thing about Zoom is it got so popular so fast that now pretty much everyone is on Zoom. And so that's not really an advantage anymore for Facebook. But at the same time, this may be a higher quality video experience. I don't know. It's been a while since I used Facebook Messenger. I did install this on my computer and I like it. But the problem is you get fatigue from this stuff. How many times are you going to tell your friends a different way to connect? You know, with my family particularly, you know, I told them all, hey, download Google Duo. And then we went to Zoom and I can't tell them, hey, now let's try Facebook Messenger again. They kill me.
Yeah, everyone gets annoyed.
Yeah.
But I used House Party the other day with for a segment that we're doing, but it works really great too. And it's fun. Like you can play games and stuff.
So that was fun. How was the video quality?
Well, it was kind of blurry.
Yeah.
But it still worked. Like I could, you know, understand everyone. It wasn't like completely laggy.
I think when we get that like crystal clear video and audio through these services, that's going to be pretty amazing because that's really the missing piece here. I mean, we've seen so many people go remote in this stay at home thing, but the video quality and the audio quality is still just not there. It's better than it ever has been, but it's still not like, wow, you're right there in the room with me. Even now as we talk, I mean, we're using FaceTime audio to connect and it's just, I could tell it's not that good. And so when you do get a good connection and especially when it's crystal clear, I think that's kind of like the last, that's going to be amazing when that happens.
So is that like what 5G hopes to accomplish?
I think so. I think better bandwidth. I also think, the problem with most of these services is that they were engineered with imagining that people don't have a very good connection. So they never really had to worry about, they were really more worried about making it a consistent connection across
right.
a variety of devices and speeds. And I think, you know, they had to take into consideration that some people have really slow internet speeds and some have really fast. So I think they tweaked that technology first. I think the next kind of wave will be who can have the highest quality video and audio chat.
Yeah.
All right, you're up.
All right, this next question comes from Lori. Hello, Rich. Hope you and your family are well. How do I transfer my Dropbox photos to Amazon Photos?
So she's ditching Dropbox for Amazon, and why not? You get free unlimited photo storage with your Amazon Prime membership, and Dropbox is going to charge you after a certain amount of uploads, so why not? Now, the only thing you have to keep in mind, and this is why I haven't really migrated over to Amazon, is that if you ever give up your Prime membership, you better get those pictures out of there pretty quick. Otherwise, you're looking at, I think it's $60 a year for the service.
Oh, wow.
Which actually is cheaper than what I pay. I pay $10 a month for Google Drive for all my photos. But anyway, so what you need to do if you've got them on Dropbox, so there's two things. If they're all on Dropbox, but also on your computer, because Dropbox can sync in different ways. Like, let's say you have a whole bunch of stuff on Dropbox, but you only have one file that you actually, or one folder that you actually want physically synced to your computer. Sometimes people do that to save space. Like they'll keep stuff in the cloud, but they'll say, okay, anything in this folder, actually keep a copy of it on my desktop. So you need to figure out, do you have all your pictures on your computer or are they actually only in the Dropbox cloud? If they're only in the Dropbox cloud, you need to start by making sure you sync everything to your computer. So a physical copy of your photo is residing on your computer's hard drive and not just in the Dropbox cloud. Now, that can cause some problems because not everyone's laptop drive might be able to accommodate all of your photo collection. And that's why a lot of people went to the cloud because they don't want to deal with all the storage being taken up on their laptop. So that's number one. Number two, all you do is go to Amazon, the Photos website. And let me see what that is. Amazon Photos. It's actually kind of funny. It's amazon.com/amazon-photos, and there is a desktop app. So once you download the desktop app, you would point it to the folder where all of your photos are stored in on your hard drive and let it go to town. It's probably going to take a while for that to upload depending on how many pictures you have. Did that all make sense, Megan?
Yeah, I think so. I do feel like I need to start using the Amazon because that's a great way to just, you know, back up your photos.
Yeah.
And I have Amazon Prime.
And it's full resolution, which is different. Google Photos is unlimited free, but it's not at the full resolution. So if your photos are over a certain megapixel, and I believe it's 12 or 16, I can't remember, but it will upload at what's called a high quality version. Now, for 99.9% of people, that's going to be just fine. But for me, I can't deal with the idea of not having my original pictures. Like, I don't want any algorithm to compress my pictures. So that's why I pay the $10 a month. And that's why the Amazon one, if you're already paying for Prime, is kind of nice because it is unlimited full resolution photo storage. But Amazon knows, they're very smart. They know that the more pictures you have in there, the more you're going to be renewing that Amazon Prime membership every year because you don't want to lose your pictures. This is fun. Did you see the story, Megan, of the guy who turned himself into a potato head by accident on Zoom?
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, so I saw that story. It keeps percolating on the news, and I downloaded an app called Snap Camera to kind of recreate this. So that's the story behind it. This guy, I don't know if he did it or if his kids did it, whoever did it, but there's an app called Snap Camera, and this comes from Snapchat, and it basically turns you into a bunch of funny things. Kind of like if I had to give you an example, you know, on Instagram, they have those filters where you can you know, look a certain way or, you know, whatever.
And on Snapchat.
Yes. Like, and I think Snapchat started them, right? But maybe not.
Right.
Well, so Snapchat has a desktop app that does that same thing. But here's the magic of it. You can, once you download this desktop app, you can use those same exact filters or lenses, as they call them, across any of your video chatting apps. So you can use it in Zoom. You can use it in Google Hangouts. You can use it in Skype. You become, your camera on your system becomes the Snap camera. It's like another input on your system. Now, this is what got this guy in trouble is because whoever set this thing up, he didn't realize that he could switch cameras back to his regular webcam on his laptop, and he couldn't figure out how to do that apparently. So I downloaded this app. I'm actually going to do a little video on how to use this app for my social media because I think that people are seeing the potato story. And I've looked at all the potato stories, and a lot of them aren't explaining how to do this and how to, most importantly, turn it off. So I'm going to do that. But anyway, if you're interested, just Google Snap Camera, and you can download it for your computer and use it in Zoom or in any of your other ones. And by the way, if you're using it in Zoom, the way that you turn it off, I will give you this right now because you need to know this, is when you're in a meeting, you want to go down to where it says Stop Video. And you press the little arrow next to it, and it says select a camera, and Snap Camera will give you the potato head, and then your FaceTime HD camera or whatever your webcam is on your computer will be back to your normal camera that everyone knows and loves. All right, Megan.
Okay. This next question comes from Tim. I was looking to see if you had anything posted about recommendations or any success. Or is it all scams regarding plug-in TV antenna products that claim to give you instant access to local channels?
Yeah, it's so funny, Megan, because when I get these questions, I get them like a lot of them all at once. So clearly someone made an advertisement on Facebook or did a big buy on TV because I got a whole bunch of these questions all at once. And these things have different names, but the way I understand them is I don't know if they're like they plug into the USB on your computer, some of them, and then other ones just, I guess, are a little tiny antenna that you can plug into the back of your TV. But the bottom line is I love that you're trying to get over-the-air reception, and people forget that you can get that, and it's very good depending on where you live. For instance, I have an antenna on my home, and I get all the channels for free that are over-the-air, and they come in perfectly.
That's amazing.
It's great and it's fantastic. But the reality is, if you don't want to go on your roof and install an antenna, which would be the best placement, the second thing is just to see if an antenna works in your home. And so I've tried different antennas in my office, and some of them work really well. And so the two that I recommend is from Mohu, M-O-H-U. I like the Leaf, which is a really small antenna that it's almost like a piece of paper you can put on your wall. Some people may have good luck with that. The other one I like is the Glide, and the Glide is more powerful, but it will help you get some channels that are more further out. Here's the thing, and right now this is a bad example because it's really tough to get stuff on Amazon right now, but in normal times, if you order one of these on Amazon, just try it out. Try it in a couple different places around your home, and if you can get reception, perfect. If you can't, return the thing. I mean, no one really knows what the reception is going to be like at your house until you put up an antenna, because there's just too many variables.
I think that's really smart. And I feel like right now also people might be thinking like, you know, I'm going to cancel my cable. Like if people need to save up money they need extra money, they might be canceling. Like I feel like entertainment's the first to go. And so I can see like,
I know, but I feel like my entertainment is the first that I want to spend more on because I subscribed. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this, but I subscribed to Hulu and HBO. Of course, I got the bills for those. I saw my credit card was charged, and I was like, ooh, it's like $15 for HBO, $12 for Hulu. I mean, that's a lot for, you know, just one month.
But I feel like
month.
maybe he's choosing, I mean, I don't know. Someone might choose internet over cable, you know, just like having Wi-Fi and just paying for Wi-Fi and not having
And the reality is you can get a lot of stuff for free nowadays. And in fact, a lot of these companies that offer paid stuff are offering free areas where you can watch stuff. Like I know Roku, that's a huge popular feature on them. It's called like, I think it's Roku, the Roku channel. And then I know Pluto TV is really popular. Tubi, T-U-B-I is really popular. And there's a bunch of them that all have stuff. Now, don't forget, they're ad supported. You know, there's Vudu, there's Crackle. There's a lot of these. I think Netflix is the only one that doesn't have any free things to watch, except I do know Netflix did have that one movie that All the Boys or whatever it was called. Remember that movie?
To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Yeah. I think they gave that out for free, whereas anyone can watch that. I think that was like one of their things, but I think we're going to see that a lot more because something like a Disney Plus, it's tricky for them because you know you're going to get a lot of stuff, but imagine how many more people would download the app if they knew they can get a couple of things for free on there, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Or they could put ads on it and make it free.
And I know that what's the other app that does this? Apple TV Plus. They have a lot of stuff for free on their app. You can watch like either like the first or second episode of things for free. And then of course, after that, if you get hooked on it, you're going to have to pay. But a lot of these things are doing that. But good question about the antennas. Try it out. Speaking of Apple and video, this is a first. Amazon is now actually selling videos through their Apple apps. And I know that doesn't sound like a big deal if you're on an Android device because everything sort of works the same. But on Apple devices, it's been really tricky for digital purchases in the past, including things like if you're on Amazon Prime Video and you wanted to rent a movie because that's your primary way of watching things, you weren't able to do that through the Amazon app on your phone. And the reason why you weren't is not because it was illegal. It's because the developers didn't want to put that functionality in because any purchase that goes through Apple, they have to give Apple a 30% cut of that purchase. And so this is pretty typical for apps. If an app sells for $1, they are giving 30 cents of that dollar to Apple. And that's why things like if you look at Netflix, you can't really sign up or pay for Netflix through Apple. If you download the Netflix app on your iPhone, it just says, hey, go to netflix.com and sign up. There's other apps that do that. I think Spotify does that as well. I think you used to be able to sign up for Spotify through Apple, and then they took that functionality away. And some of these apps actually charge more if you go through the Apple purchase. So it might be $11.99 to subscribe to a music service through Apple, but then if you go to their actual website, it's only $9.99. So again, this is a pretty big change because now it's kind of breaking down those barriers. And I love that Apple and Amazon are doing this. I hope, and this was actually something that came up when I was selling my book. A lot of people would ask me, hey, Rich, I can't buy your book. It says not available for purchase through the Kindle app. And how confusing is that to people? They just figured, oh, you can't buy this. Because they don't want to give all those books that they sell. Imagine you got to give 30% of that to Apple. So hopefully that will change too. I hope that you can soon buy Kindle books through the Kindle app on iPhone. That would be pretty amazing. Or on more importantly, the iPad.
All right. This next question comes from Lisa. Hi, Rich. How safe is Google Pay Now that some are saying to use? How safe is Google Pay Now? Some are saying to use it, but not to touch card keypads or the use of cash. I'm a little leery of using it.
Totally safe. Google Pay is the answer to Apple Pay. So do you use Apple Pay on your iPhone?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I've recommended all these mobile wallets for a long time. And the reason why I recommend them is because they're actually safer than swiping your card. Now, I said swiping your card because now most credit cards have a chip in them and debit cards. And so I can't really say that tapping your phone is safer than actually I can't say that tapping your phone is safer than using the chip in your card because they both work in the same way. They both generate a one-time number that is passed on to the retailer. And what that means is, do you remember when that big Target hack happened? When do you remember that?
Was that like 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. It was a big deal. And it was like, oh my gosh, anyone who used their credit card or debit card at Target, you were, you know, at risk because the hackers got millions and millions of card numbers. And that was back before we had chip cards. Now, when you use your chip card at a retailer, and I'm talking when you dip instead of swipe, right? The only place we swipe anymore is the gas station. Otherwise, your chip is pretty much how you're paying everywhere else. Now, when you dip that chip card, it is transmitting a one-time card number to the merchant. So what that means is if a hacker got that number or intercepted it, it would not work. It just dissipates after that one-time use. And I guess online we still use our credit cards, right? Actually typing in the number. So
yeah.
So that's another place where you are at risk. And so if you can use Google Pay online or if you can use one of these third-party services, I know they've got like Google, what's the other one? I think Apple Pay works online for a certain number of retailers. Anyway, long story short, yes, this is totally safe. It is a better way to pay in general versus swiping, but it is kind of the same as dipping your chip into or dipping your card into the chip reader. But yeah, and it's also much more convenient because I thought about this the other day when I was at the grocery store checking out and I had to use my PIN number and I was like, ugh, gross. I got to touch this disgusting PIN pad after all these, you know, people have touched it in these COVID times.
Yeah, so, it's super gross.
So I was thinking it would be cool if the companies, like the credit card companies, would lift the requirements. Like right now, it's like under like $25 or $50. You don't have to put your PIN number in or you don't have to sign. Oh, whatever. Anyway, I don't think that's true, actually. Never mind. I think that was true. I don't scratch that last part. I'm not sure that that's still the case. But anyway, good question.
It is interesting. Yeah. It is interesting because, like, I've noticed because I've been trying to use Apple Pay whenever I'm, like, you know, at the pharmacy or whatever. And they always say, like, I'll be like, oh, do you guys have Apple Pay? And they'll say, like, yeah, but it doesn't really work. And it's just like, oh, come on. Like, have machines have.
And what does that mean? When people say that, they say that all the time. They're like, well, it doesn't really work. Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean it doesn't work? It either works or it doesn't, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
I was at a tiny diner in Solving, and they had, do you remember when I did the story on the Square Terminal? Were you working with me at that point?
That sounds
it was
familiar.
Like I flew up to San Francisco. It was like a little thing that you would, anyway, it was Square. I got to interview the guy who started Twitter.
Oh, okay.
You remember that?
I don't know. I don't think I was with you.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so I saw the Square Terminal, which is like, to me, if you're a small business, get the Square Terminal. It is the best payment system ever. It looks like a little iPhone display, and it just is so beautiful as a method for taking my money. I am so happy to spend my money at your business. And I did the story on this thing, and I never saw one in real life until this was, you know, like a couple weeks ago when I was insolving, before you couldn't leave your house. And this diner had one of these little Square terminals, and I just assumed that this person at the desk was going to say, oh, you can't use Apple Pay. We don't know how to use it with this. And I was all ready to like try to just shove my phone right next to it to like get it to like click, you know? And she was like, she's like, oh, are you using Apple Pay? I'm like, oh, you know about it. She's like, oh yeah, just tap. And I was like, yes. So don't judge a book by its cover and assume because it's a small rinky-dink kind of business, they don't know what they're talking about. That was my, you know, that was my terribleness coming through. And yeah, so I was nicely surprised.
Shocked.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I don't even remember what the topic was, but I love when businesses take the tap to pay. It is my absolute favorite thing. That is for sure. Okay, let me get through two quick stories before we get to my interview with Libby. First off, if you can't find a webcam right now, and I know there's a lot of people that have been searching for them, yeah, they're all sold out everywhere. Wyze, if you have one of these cheap Wyze cameras laying around your house, the company has put out firmware that will turn your Wyze cam into a webcam. So if you really need one of these things, you can download the firmware, install it on the Wyze cam, and instead of becoming a security camera, it will become a temporary web camera that you can use with your computer. This is not, they made it easy, but believe me, it's not going to be very simple to use. You know, this is not something my mom would do, but it's something that if you're a little bit of a nerd, you can do this. And it's kind of cool. You just put the software on it. It's called flashing the software. And next thing you know, your Wyze cam becomes a webcam. When this whole COVID thing blows over in 3 or 4 years, you can put it back to being a security camera. And by the way, it can't be both at the same time. They tested it with Zoom, GoToMeeting, BlueJeans, Google Hangouts, Skype, and Cisco. The other thing is if you have a Samsung Galaxy S10 or Note 10, you are getting some Galaxy S20 features, which is really nice. So starting Friday, April 3rd, there's going to be a software update that's going to roll out to give you several features that launched with the S10, including single take, which is a way to tap the shutter button once and have your phone take all kinds of pictures, wide, slow-mo, telephoto. And the other one is night hyperlapse, night mode, filters, pro video, clean view, which groups together the same shots in your gallery, and quick crop, which lets you crop pictures fast, and quick share, which lets you share things kind of like AirDrop style to your friends. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know one of my favorite new apps is called Libby. Not necessarily a new app, but new to me. And I have so far read several books with it for free all through my local library. But here to describe exactly what it is and give me a better understanding of how the app works is Steve Potash. He is with Overdrive, which makes Libby. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich, and I appreciate your support of our public libraries and benefiting from it.
I imagine you guys are seeing increased demand, but let's just start with what Libby is.
Libby is a free app available to all readers of all ages, and with a library card, the books are free. In the U.S., you can borrow an ebook, a popular ebook from the public library, and then say, I want to read with Kindle. And it will automatically appear in your Kindle either device or in your Kindle reading app. And I really want to mention the audiobook player in Libby has been gaining so much love for the majority of Americans who have yet to discover the real pleasure of having a story read to you. And almost every one of the bestsellers is available either as a free ebook from the library or as an audiobook, both in Libby.
All right, so tell me about the process of getting these books. So what I've done is I've sort of started using Libby as my book reading list. So when I hear about a book, I just add it to my list because there are some waits for these books.
I can tell you that the books that the public library makes available for citizens to borrow, They are all paid for, and it is a tremendous source of ongoing revenue and earnings, both for the publishers and, more importantly, the authors and agents. If the library has 10 copies of a new bestseller, the first 10 people that would walk in the branch and borrow it get to borrow it, and others would be on a wait list. That same system now is in the virtual library with Libby. But I'm also proud to say that many libraries are now adopting a simultaneous use or always available model.
That's amazing. Now, I've also seen sometimes where, I don't know, it's like just a little award or something where it's like, oh, it's your lucky day. You can get this book right now. What's that all about?
So LAPL and San Diego County Libraries are using this lucky day feature. So if your readers in Libby or at lapl.overdrive.com or sdcl.overdrive.com, they can check their browser dozen times a day. So even if they are on a wait list, you may just see it pop into the home page and you can borrow it immediately.
Ooh, I like that.
So you can borrow all the ebooks and audiobooks and magazines and never worry about them being late. There's never a fine or late fee, because at the end of the lending period, which libraries or the user can set, the books automatically expire and return themselves to the collection.
Now, that's one thing I have a question about, because, you know, for some of these books I see it's like 21 days. And what if you're not able to finish that book in those 21 days?
Well, Libby has a very cool feature called Renew. And if you are getting to the end of your lending period and you have chapters to go, you can see if it's available for you to extend the loan. But if there are many people waiting for that book, you may have to get at the back of the line again since you had your turn.
Can you talk about the increase in downloads? Have you seen more interest in Libby ever since we've all been kind of recommended to stay at home?
Rich, that's a mild understatement. It's become mission critical that Overdrive and Libby not only be prepared to onboard millions of first-time users over these last 2+ weeks. Libby will see, if you don't have a library card, it will prompt you, would you like to get an instant card using your mobile cell phone number?
Steve Potash from Overdrive, thank you for joining me to talk about Libby. I am just about to finish my book on Uber called Super Pumped, which I got through Libby. I've got my wife signed up on the app, so she's going to start using it. Megan, are you using it at all?
I am. You know, it's hard when like certain things you have to wait like a couple weeks for. So I have been like reading regular books, and I do have a book on Libby that I've been trying to finish.
Yeah. My advice is to really set up a list of books that you want to read. So that way, when one of them comes available, something will come available. But that's my advice, is don't just try to find a book and start reading it that day, because you may be a little disappointed to find that it's not available. So make your book reading list on Libby, and then it will notify you when a book is available to read, and then you can download it to your Kindle. Such a cool service. That's going to do it for this episode of the show. For links to what we talked about, take a look at the show notes. And we'd love it if you would rate and review this podcast. I mean, let's be honest, what else do you have to do these days? We're all kind of sitting at home. If you do that, it helps other people discover it. Just go to ratethispodcast.com/richontech. Or we'd love it if you texted the link to a friend. Let me read a recent review. Sue in Camarillo says, Rich on Tech always delivers great information. Love his podcasts, TV spots. I'm such a techie dinosaur, but I can pick up nice tidbits to help me get a bit more up to speed. Well, thank you, Sue in Camarillo. Producer Megan, where can folks find you?
I'm on Twitter at Producer Megan.
And you can find me safe at home and on social media at Rich on Tech. I am so ready to get back to normal life. I hope that we can very soon. But stay safe, folks. I'm Rich DeMiro. On behalf of myself, producer Megan, and everyone that helps get this show to your ears, thanks for listening. We will talk to you real soon.